You're listening to Radio Diaries.
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Hi, this is Tembi.
Let me do the introduction now. Hi, my name is Josh.
My name is Randy Cooper.
My name is Amanda.
They call me Weasel.
This is Christelle.
Hi, this is Laura.
And I'm Joe Richman. This is the Radio Diaries podcast. As always, if you like what we're doing here and want to help us keep it going, please consider making a donation at radiodiaries.org. On today's podcast, Jeff's Diary. When Jeff Rogers was 16 years old, he started referring to himself as a Hafrican. Jeff grew up in Boston. He had a black father and a white mother. And like many teenagers, he was trying to figure out who he was. This was back in 1998 when I gave Jeff a tape recorder to document his life for our Teenage Diaries series. A lot has changed since then, for Jeff and for the country. Look at our president. Later in the podcast, we'll talk to Jeff about his life now and how it feels to look back at the 16-year-old version of yourself. But first, here's Jeff's original teenage diary.
Good morning, Jeffrey. It's time to get up. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm coming.
What's going on? It's Jeff. 6:20. Gotta get up and go to school. Usually every morning, listen to some music. Because I gotta get energized, like my morning coffee. I love my music. This morning, the selection is disco. Sister Sledge, he's the greatest dancer. Yes, I do listen to disco.
I wonder why. He's the greatest dancer.
My name is Jeff. I'm 16. I live in Dorchester, which is part of Boston. I live with both my parents, my father, my mother, two brothers and a sister. My family's all together. It looks like an unusual bunch because people don't quite place us as a family right away. We look like a real motley crew.
He's the greatest dancer. I wonder why.
I wonder why. He's the greatest dancer. I wonder why.
When most people look at me, they think I'm Puerto Rican. And it's like, that's exactly what I look like. The stereotypical Puerto Rican. Like, slick back hair, long sideburns, both ears pierced. One of those little pencil-thin teenage mustache. But it always ends up coming up when someone says, how do you say such-and-such in Spanish to me? And I say, I'm not Spanish. And they say, what are you? Let me get into some of my pop's old records. My father's really into music. You know, he has a lot of old records. And going through the records and tapes and CDs that he has, then you come across funny stuff like this. I was like, hey. Three Dog Night. It's corny, but it's cool, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is my theme song.
A child is black, a child is white, the whole world looks upon a side, a beautiful side.
Usually, when someone asks what I am, I say I'm African. You know, my father's black, my mother's white. And when I was younger, to me, that's the way it was supposed to be. Father meant black person. Mother meant white person. You know? I thought, it was normal. Anything else was unusual. And, you know, race had no bearing on anything. To me, two Asian people could just have a black kid. It made perfect sense when I was younger.
I'll do mine first.
I know you're hungry.
Yeah, my parents, the coffee connoisseurs. I was a coffee maker. I like to DJ on it. It's like they always have that argument, nature versus nurture. You know, is it the way you're brought up or just the way you're born? When you're younger, you don't ponder, you know. You know, who am I? What? Why am I here? You know, you're just living for the day, having fun, watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and eating cereal. Then, you know, you hit that beautiful certain age, and you start to redefine yourself. And the biggest thing is probably the opposite sex, or like I say, in my case, girls.
Blondie, Michaela, Shannon. These are little numbers that you rip off a little piece of paper. I got other pages and numbers, like ones I actually took the time to write down. These are the miscellaneous ones. Liz, Mimi, Monique.
You know, as in elementary school and in middle school, to girls, I was more or less undesirable. People used to make fun of me, rank on me, whatever, a lot. And I know a lot of kids got made fun of when they were little because they were mixed. But I never did, and I'll tell you why. Because I was so fat, people ignore it to jump on the easier fat jokes. I was huge, I mean, pretty big. But, you know, it made me sharp-tongued, sharp-witted. You know, you had to develop guts living like that. And it was right at the time when I hit middle school, I started getting some style. You know what I'm saying? Dressing a little better, taking care of myself, realizing that, you know, you had to comb your hair. You didn't just get up and go. You know, little stuff, you know, wipe the crust out your eye. And next thing you know, the girls are looking at me. And I'm glad they look at me now. Yep, I got them all. About to be out the door. I guess I'll check y'all later. School I go to is Boston Latin Academy in Roxbury. Right now I'm just going through the hallway. Bell just rang, fourth period. Lunch is about to start. I look unusual with a big microphone walking through the hallway.
What are you doing?
It's my job.
Oh.
When you walk into the cafeteria at school, in one corner sit all the white kids, then more in the middle sit the black kids, and then on the other side there's a little place for the outcasts, and somewhere the Hispanic kids get scattered.
All right, now, everyone at this table is white, right?
Yeah, we white.
Why do you think all the white people sit together?
I'm thinking about getting the race change, you know.
I remember actually one time the principal issued like a little statement about that. Like, yeah, you guys should try to intermingle more or whatever. Everyone politely ignored her. Usually I sit at one of the black tables, the black male table.
Yo, so you wouldn't sit at a table with white folks?
Personally, I don't think I'd fit in because it's like a different culture.
Yeah.
Keep it on and on and on and on and, you know what I'm saying? Only time when black kids tend to consider me not fully black seems to be when the actual subject of race comes up. One of the things when you listen to rap's always talking about there's going to be a race war, and people kind of look at it like, which side am I going to be on? Who will I fight for? And that kid Kamal that I was talking to, he's arguing there's going to be a race war, and he said the reason why no one told me about it was because I'm half and half. That's really, you know, he said, you didn't hear about it because you're half and half. As if it was like, yeah, he's cool, but he also fraternizes with the enemy, so he can't know our plans, you know, he can't be trusted. I don't know, it seems like a whole bunch of malarkey now, but all I'm saying is that, you know, I'm never really, 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 really fully in. It's almost like, if we're on a sports team, they've all been on the Celtics their whole life. But me, I've been on the Celtics for years, but I got traded from the Clippers. So if I was able to say, yeah, the Clippers isn't a bad organization, they'd say, yeah, you're just saying that because you were once on the Clippers. You never know. When it comes to the race issue, I could just be a traitor, you know? It's funny. A lot of people, a lot of black people have no interaction with white people. No white friends. And a lot of white people the same. I actually have a black person and a white person live in my house, interact constantly. Chose each other over anyone else on the whole earth and the whole universe. And it's illustrated to me every day, you know.
Please!
Try your head.
Oh, yeah.
I need Jehovah for allowing us to come together as a family and enjoy each other's company. Thank you for all the blessings that you've given us.
These days, you know, my parents are kind of affluent, but there was a time when they were really dirt poor. They lived in the projects. They lived in Columbia Point, probably the oldest and biggest projects in Boston.
Amen.
Pass our place around.
I'll do mine first.
As my father tells it, and I never heard my mother disagree, him being black, My father walked up to my mother one day. He walked up and said, "Are you racist?" And she said, you know, as is cool for white people to say then and now, No, not at all. Not racist, me, no, never." And he said, "Well, I am," and walked away. According to him, that's the first thing he ever said to her. You know, he was just being a smart guy, just like he is now. And she was just playing the straight woman, just like she does now.
You never know what you're going to like or who you're gonna end up with. When I got to your mother, the color really had nothing to do with it. I liked her. She was all over me like a wet blanket. I couldn't do anything about it. I succumbed, and you guys are here. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you. I mean, back then, would you say it was more, I don't think I had to put this, was that more the exception or the rule? I mean, down south in 1960, it was against the law for black people and white people to get married or be together.
What happened was, when your mother and I realized that she was pregnant and that we had been playing with fire and got burnt, I went over, I told my mother. My mother took it better than I thought. And then we had to tell other people. And they urged us to give the baby up, give your brother up, big time.
They didn't approve of it. All the notions that they had, maybe that we weren't going to stay together, that it wasn't going to work, that we were going to have a terrible life, that we were going to end up on welfare forever, you know, all of those notions. It didn't pan out.
It's so funny when I think back now. My father's father, he loved your mother, and she could just talk to him. She'd say, "Hi, Grandpa," and he'd just beam from ear to ear, you know. Without a doubt, you know, he'd always introduce, "This is my granddaughter, this is my granddaughter," you know, and people would look, you know. He didn't care. But you can't see in that picture up there, but my grandmother was a beautiful, beautiful woman, and she was, you know, she's the image of your mother. Somewhere along the line, one of the slaves or something was impregnated, but somewhere along the line, there's some white blood in almost all of our families, but I think in Grandma. But if you told Grandma that she was white, and we used to do that just to tease her sometimes, she used to get upset about it. I'm not white, you know. One of the things that I'm kind of envious of you guys is that when you're with your mother, you can look like you're white. When you're with your father, you can look like you're black. Bada bing, bada boom, that's it. You can be whatever you want. You know, you can be whatever you want. As Mr. T used to say, "I pity the fool that don't understand it."
Okay.
And that's one of the things we try to teach you guys.
Talking to my parents tonight has been kind of unusual. You know, we talked way longer than we planned. In fact, we talked for something to 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. One day, my father was listening to Stevie Wonder, and I heard dun 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 dun. That's one of the first songs I really tried to learn how to play on the piano. It does kind of make you want to reminisce. It's a dope song that way. It makes you think about stuff. I'm 16 years old, almost 17. And being black and white kind of makes sure I was always set apart. You know, a little bit different. Always a little, you know, offbeat. In life, I'm beginning to think there's only two types of people. There's the types of people that see the sneaker that everyone has and rush out to get the new style. And there's the type of people that see the sneaker that everyone has and rush out to get something so that they can be so different and so outstanding. And I think I'm the latter. I love to be a little bit different.
I'm going to stop my little speech right here. I think I said enough. So until then, peace out. There's a ribbon in the sky for
Jeff's Diary aired in 1998 as part of our Teenage Diaries series. I recently got in touch with Jeff to find out what's happened to him since. He's gone through his ups and downs over the past 15 years, like many of us. He has two kids, he plays music, and he still thinks a lot about race. But Jeff no longer uses the term Hafrican. Now it's mulatto. In fact, Jeff is the founder of something called Mulatto History Month. Jeff says you probably haven't heard of it yet. Okay, so I am on the phone now with Jeff Rogers, who is no longer a teenager. Jeff, can you introduce yourself?
How you doing? I'm Jeff Rogers, the mulatto. I'm 31 years old from Boston, Mass.
So let's just get a little bit of a life update. What's been happening?
I grew up. I had two kids. I have a 9 and a 5-year-old. I got married, got unmarried, bought a house, got unhoused. Now I work with kids, and I'm actually a music producer as well.
A lot happens in 16 years, it turns out.
There's a lot of living there. A lot of living.
Now, okay, Mulatto History Month. Please, tell us.
Okay, so Mulatto History Month actually started as a joke. I wrote on Facebook, you know, February 16th to March 15th was Mulatto History Month. And it's just because, you know, February is the black month, right? And March is the whitest month because that's when white people start wearing shorts. So I started off as a joke on social media, just joking around and putting little did you knows and great heroes of mulatto history like DeBarge and Philip Michael Thomas from Miami Vice. But it's also, it has a kernel of truth in it because people think of being mulatto as just being half of one thing and half of the other. But really, it's its own experience. You know, it's different. It's not half of a white experience and half of a black experience. It's its own thing. And so the kernel of that joke grew some importance to me. That idea that mulattoes have a shared common experience that neither black nor whites know that much about.
So let me ask you this. Here at Radio Diaries, what can we do to help promote Mulatto History Month? What can we do for you?
Well, if anyone who wants to see, if you look up Professor J. Gray, J just the letter, and Gray, G-R-E-Y, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It's a thing, people.
You know, listening back to your story again recently and also just talking to you now, if I had to kind of sum up one of the things that I think about you, it's that you really have no interest in trying to fit in.
I was never going to be like regular. I was never going to just pass. I was mulatto, fat, had weird personal taste. I'm a lefty. Every time you can find the minority of a thing, I'll be that. I so badly failed early at like totally fitting in that I was closer to being exceptional by standing out, you know? So like, rather than climbing the tallest mountain, I'll climb a lower mountain, but maybe that no one has ever climbed before.
So you're making music these days, and I'm wondering if you have anything that you'd like to go add on from this interview.
Yeah. So my group's called Lightspeed Unlimited, and it's me, my partners Goldie and Scott Tim. This song is called Stargazer.
Jeff, thank you.
Stargazer.
Stay tuned to our podcast to find out what happened to the original Teenage Diarists. We'll be catching up with more of them as part of our Teenage Diaries Revisited series.
Just being in my presence is sunbathing. If you can see into my mind, it's like stargazing.
The Radio Diaries podcast is produced by Sarah Kate Kramer. If you enjoy our work, please consider making a donation. Just go to radiodiaries.org and click donate. I'm Joe Richman. Thanks for listening.
Man standing, Jay will be the first man flying to toe across worlds from Alpha Design. They say you nice, but the niggas is lying, and they crying. They pull me off course like the sirens. Jay Foe, death is fine, life is fine, testifying. Well, man can in fact defy the odds. A nigga with enough willpower to try the gods with empty hands and a righteous cause. You can't fight this hard, this long, and get Nathan. These niggas wasting the time, no destination. I see infinity, and in my estimation, it is achievable. With enough determination, the unbelievable, conjured by the undeniable, is inconceivable. See, you see it with your eyes. lit me alive. What they told you to gain control, but I know that they can't steal your soul. A nigga on a roll, always at the earth turn. And I know a thousand MCs that ain't worth burning. They like burnt this, carbon copy image of a master. One man go first, everybody after. Disaster on two legs, for me they call me a plague on a bitch nigga. My wrath of a ball, he who test the king. Oh, you itching to step, I got just the thing. Kiss the ring, Mr. Bling, my mouth burn like Listerine, blistering. Mr. Clean a nigga clock, see his spine stiffening. Spit till I'm hoarse, sway like I'm horse whispering. Nigga stay the course, then the course leave glistening. Bitch shining, nigga mind, poison with strychnine. Reclaim the culture, the company strip mine. The musically divine, verbally inclined. Extemporaneous, yet never out of time. Write rhymes like a vet, passion like a rookie. Had a mind to bet, but couldn't find the bookie. Gotta take sides against him, never ever lost. Paid all dues in full, never mind the cost to insanity. Rap is all vanity and no death. J cause calamity, the rap I'm in Hotep. Who make niggas hot step, who venture a few steps. Hit more niggas in the UTEP. Two-step is brutal, Mike Boodle. Drive niggas Lulu, moonwalking baselines. Y'all spew doodle, true to myself. That's the only absolute, you have to lose. For the stars I'd rather shoot. Immortality is not reality for a man. Black holes reduce just as novas expand. Time slipping through your fingers like sand. While you chase the dust, the universe is in the palm of your hand. Can't stand whackers, can't take it lying down. It's the new guy in town raining. Look for higher ground, stormbringer. Gathering your broken dreams, mending. Harnessing the jet stream, focusing, sending. Sound bombs to deaf ears, hopeless and descending. Failure temporary, glory never ending. Before a horseman ride, and I ride to meet him. Look him in the dead eyes, promise to defeat him. I stare down certain death and uncertain life. With the fury of the devil and the passion of the Christ. Say it twice. J4 ain't nothing nice.